You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Good morning. Good morning. Oh, well, I'm a little bit late getting on the air as you heard the music go on and on. So what was I doing? It's a beautiful morning right now. It rained and rained and rained. We had torrential rain yesterday. And, you know, we have this cycle. We get all panicky because of the drought, etc. And the whole land has been a history of droughts and occasional deluges and droughts. And it's just where this place on the planet sits. Anyway, so yesterday in the last couple of days, it's been pouring rain, pouring without any let up, just torrential day and night. And I noticed that Mozart, when I would let him out, he didn't like it. He just didn't like that rain. He would kind of look like, oh, really, are you kidding me? And then he'd go back in. And so try as I would, umbrellas, everything else, it just didn't seem to work out well. And so, but I noticed a couple of times he would brave the rain, turn right by the corner of the house, and he would just, like, something had his interest. And I happened to see out the window that a outdoor umbrella fell over. So I thought, well, maybe he didn't know how to approach that. And it was raining, and he was a little skittish about the rain anyway. So, but it happened every single time, and I would call him back. So I went out this morning, very early this morning, and same thing. And so I went around the corner because it was so deluging. I didn't go around the corner yesterday. And there on its side was a perfect deceased bunny. And this rabbit was perfect. This small bunny, but not too small. It was maybe, I don't know, 6 inches, 8 inches. And it was on his side as if he were running, or she, and the eye was open, but very moist and very, because it had been raining. The coat was beautiful, all smooth and wet, and it was cold as well. So there were no bugs, no nothing. And so it was beautiful, but very touching and very sad. So as the morning went on, there were some few things I had to take care of, and I'm considering now what am I going to do for this bunny and with this bunny? The bunny is no longer with us. The bunny is in bunny heaven somewhere with St. Francis and all the other animals as they wander around. And so I decided that I will bury the bunny, and in honor of all things and all creatures and all creation, in honor of Job 12:7. That they are our teachers. Ask the animals and they will tell you, the birds of the sea and they will inform you. The birds, I always say birds of the sea. So whatever birds are under the sea, well, they'll inform us as well. So birds of the air, they will inform you. The fish of the sea will speak to you. And who of these does not show how wondrous God is? So as I look at this morning with all its life, with the hummingbirds and the flowers and the after rain smells and the snails and the bugs and my dog, it's possible that my dog found that, but I don't think he did. He wasn't out long enough, and there was nothing about that bunny that showed any kinds of trauma. So it's hard to say. Small bunny in torrential downpour, maybe lost its way. It was on concrete. Have no idea. But just absolutely beautiful. So what I was doing after I got connected with Alex, I said, I have to go out and, just deal with the bunny. So I put the bunny in a box and carefully on his side, and he is now cooling, waiting for me to do a little burial, which I will do. And I will have St. Francis there with me. And I will, maybe I'll say the canticle. Maybe there are other St. Francis prayers, but he does the canticle to, I think it's Brother Sun, Sister Moon, or vice versa. I will look that up and I will say that prayer in honor of God's great creation and that beautiful, beautiful bunny, the rabbits. And just to think about all life and to think about how life and life cycle goes on and on and on. And we humans, and we know that animals do mourn. We know that animals have their own way of mourning. All you have to do is, even cats, you know, cats we all look at and say, oh, you know, they're just these little solitary beings. But when you have two cats and one of them goes, the other one mourns. Sometimes they'll lose their hair. Sometimes things will happen. And we can put all kinds of thoughts about what they're actually feeling. Oh, well, that's just because their world has just changed. Well, our worlds change when we lose someone, and we mourn different ways. We mourn in different ways, but it is very stressful when one of their own is gone. And as you know, also the mourning and the desire to be together in coyotes, wolves, the lone coyote. I used to hear that all the time. And in Arizona, you'd hear this little, sometimes you could tell they were tiny and lost. Little coyotes, just one voice. Just mournful. And then all of a sudden, after a bit of time, you hear an entire pack and they're calling that coyote. They're giving them signals. This is where we are. And they may be on the move, but they will continue to go back and forth. And then you hear that lone coyote or the lone coyote pup calling as you hear it moving in different directions. It is an amazing, wonderful experience. So that's what I was doing this morning, or just a few minutes before I got in the air, and why you listened to a little bit more of the bumper music before we got on the air. So, just say a little prayer to St. Francis in honor of all God's creation and in honor of all those right now who are in need of that understanding, those in prison, those who perhaps have had some kind of an illness that's knocked them for a loop. I know of one in particular who is a very young, fairly young man in his 50s, and who has very little heart function left and is alive and had what surgery he could and is on the list for a heart transplant. And there are things in his life he's going to have to change in order for his world to continue on this earth. And so we pray for those people as well, that the cycle of life and the simplicity of life and the one thing about the creatures that they teach us is that they behave only in the manner in which God created them to function. When we crowd them, when we ruin their environment, they do behave aberrantly. They come out of their usual nature of things, but they always are true to their nature. If they're predators, they will always hunt for prey. They may or may not find it. And they may innovate a little bit. They have preferred prey. If they're grazers and they're non-predator, they're going to go toward their nature. They're not going to make excuses that we know of and blame, well, I have to drink because, or they just don't understand me, or they're all wrong and I'm right. They just do what they need to do in order to survive. And it comes down to its simplest form. So we're going to get into actually a little bit of that, because I want to talk about how do you love yourself when you're rejected? So, you know, and I would think that not only do animals have a sense of abandonment and rejection, of course they do. Of course they do. That is witnessed by people who have had to give up their dogs, let's say, or their pets. and they encounter them, let's say 3 or 4 years down the road after they may see the family they gave them to. I've had that experience myself. And, or someone has lost a pet, even though they have bonded with their new owners, with you, with me, when they see someone they haven't seen in years. Let's say a dog has a 10-year lifespan, 12 years, 20 years lifespan, and they may not see somebody for 5 and 10 years. When they see them, some of them let out this cry, this mournful cry, or this howl for joy, or they start getting all excited. I have had that experience with Mozart, for the person who, who rescued him, because he may have been in 2 or 3 different shelters and rescued before and either was loose or was given back to a shelter. But the person who rescued him from the Haikyuu shelter in Los Angeles, and after his euthanasia date was already rapidly approaching and had passed, and there was just no escaping what was going to happen next. And someone saw his face on a Facebook page, contacted a guy way down here, and the guy said, sure, I'll come get him, got him. And 2-3 years later, after I've had him, when I bring him back, which has only been one time after the guy actually got attacked by one of the dogs that was just beyond repair, and we came to visit, and Mozart knew everything. As we started to drive into the area, he was like all getting all excited and happy and dancy, and he knew him. He knew the smells. He sniffed around. He knew where to go in the house. He knew everything. So animals are creations, and by creations, they embody love because they come from love. They come from God's love. So when we come back, we're going to talk about love. We're going to talk about ways to love yourself in times of rejection and how sometimes you turn on yourself during times of rejection. So get your favorite St. Francis prayer. You can text it 573-4BREAD-4. See you after the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, on this glorious and beautiful day with a little bit of tender sadness, finding that dead bunny on my patio. But it was so beautifully and gorgeously formed with the rain just washing away any kind of dirt, any kind of dishevelment. Everything seemed very, it just seemed like a bunny in a running position. It was just very poignant to me this morning to see that, especially for some reason, as I was deciding on the subject matter today, because I had run into several people this week. And the theme started to be, the theme seemed to be for the week, rejection, loving yourself, the need to run, and the need to numb yourself out, the need to not feel, because it came down to those feelings of abandonment and rejection. And then it came down to the feelings of self-abandonment and rejection. So I want to talk today about what to do when you feel rejected. How do you love yourself in times of rejection? And how do you stop rejecting yourself? Could there be a core down there of the abandonment, the re-triggering of abandonment? Oftentimes, we talk about the fear of rejection and the fear of abandonment. And in some ways, the words, the fear of, almost implies that it's it is damaging, but it almost implies that is not really a reason for it, that you just have a fear, like you're afraid of the dark or afraid of snakes. It came from somewhere. It came from somewhere. When someone's afraid they're not going to have enough food, usually it comes, now there are those other cases, of course, but usually it comes from either a culture of no food, starvation, a family who has experienced, like a lot of people who lived through the Depression, their children oftentimes were brought up with this mentality that there won't be enough. Clean your plate. All this, not, and of course it's good stuff not to waste food, but a lot of it came because a lot of the people had no food during the Depression. They really literally had no food. There are people that I've known who have escaped from, like, Bosnia, who used to have to send their children into long bread lines with bombs going off because there was no food. So then you can have a fear of not having enough food or reaching a point of lack of food. So that's something that it's implied that when we say, oh, you just have a fear of abandonment, a fear of rejection, as if we just kind of are insecure, you know, I don't know. It almost implies a bit of a weakness in the language. But when you look at it in another way, rejection triggers a fundamental false core belief that you are abandonable, that you are rejectable, that you have done something wrong, that you are somehow at fault. Now, of course, we do always say that it does, that in any situation, you have some culpability. However, let's say you're 19 years old. Let's say you're 30 years old and you're involved with someone, or you're becoming involved with someone, or you really like someone and you're feeling as if that person likes you back. They talk to you. They talk about the future a little bit. They invite you to go places. No matter who you are, let's say you're 15, 16 years old. In that moment, it's not like, oh, well, you're going to just not have some investment there, some personal investment about you as a person, giving yourself to this other person, even if it is even if you're not looking at marriage, let me put it that way. And then all of a sudden the person says, you know, I really can't, I found someone else, or they don't talk to you again. Things stop and you don't know what happened and you're given a platitude. You know, all the sitcoms have made jokes about, you know, yes, no, it's not you, it's me. The kind of patronizing, or you would really like my new love, you know, that kind of thing. These things are very difficult for people to hear, both men and women. They're, is a tendency then to just sink, depending on who you are. Some people let it roll off their backs, you know, like water off a duck's back. It's like, well, you know, I guess I just wasn't meant to be, or their loss, or whatever it is. I know people who actually move on rather quickly. Other people, not so quickly. And this week, there seemed to be kind of a theme going around of a lot of people that I ran into, both men and women, but I ran into more women because I was around more women this week, who had that feeling of self-rejection and rejection from the past. Some of it went back to childhood. And the common theme was the maladaptive coping mechanisms, the beating yourself up, these rejecting of yourself, the I'm bad, I'm worthless, I should have done better, I'm not loving enough, I didn't listen to God. Or going a couple steps further than that, and therefore, without actually consciously making this decision, they dive into addictive behaviors. Overeating, maybe it's sex, maybe it's pornography, maybe it's alcohol, drugs, shopping spree. We all know that some of that is part and parcel for those kinds of feelings. Not too bad, not so bad to indulge a little bit in your extra ice cream or maybe a few tears and a bunch of movies for a night or two. Those things are all normal. So what is normal in the face of rejection? A lot of that, of course, depends on what what the rejection is. Is it a rejection for a job? Is it a rejection for a place in class? Is it a rejection for a project? Rejection because you're an artist and you keep knocking on doors and nobody seems to like what you do. Rejection because you're a writer and no one seems to want, your writing doesn't seem relevant, or you've heard some harsh comments about it. Could it be rejection from your own child? When you're trying to be there and all they do is hear something different and turn it into just complete rejection of you. Could it be abandonment from a spouse, rejection from a boyfriend? Could it be that old triggering of rejection, that feeling of rejection that you may have been housed and clothed and nurtured and loved to the best of your parents' ability, but you may have had that always, that constant rejection. You're not good enough. You should be better. You should be better. You should be empathetic like your sister. You should be smart like your sister. Why aren't you as musical as your sister? Or some of the even more covert, you are the star. We expect more from you. You have such a gift. Why aren't you using it? God wants you to use your gift. And a child can hear that as, you're not a good person. An adult hears that, and we're eager to know what we can do to be better. A child wants to please their parents. A child doesn't understand. And what happens is you get incorporated this fear of, if I don't do that, they won't love me. If I'm not better, if I don't bring home the A, if I don't sing the best soprano, if I don't play the best in band. Or you hear the constant comparisons. Oh, well, her sister's good at math, but she's more of the homemaker type. If you're a parent, stop. Just stop that. We don't know. Everybody goes through different things. I wanted to be a fireman. I used to be upset because I wasn't a guy and I couldn't be Jesus when I was little because I knew Jesus was coming back, right? So I'm like 7 years old and I'm thinking, wait a minute. I want to be Jesus. You know, I mean, little kids think lots of things, want to be a gypsy. You know, you have no idea what your child will develop into. And the very proclivity that they may have, they may be exuberant. They may be amazing at music. And perhaps later, their desire to go into mathematics may override that because it all is kind of fits into the same thing. In fact, music is very mathematical. So, in fact, it is mathematical. And any musician will tell you that. Doesn't mean that all mathematicians are going to make great musicians or all musicians are going to make great mathematicians, but it's just known. So we're going to talk about how to love yourself when you feel rejected. We're going to talk about what to do when you feel rejected. And we're going to talk about some ways you might be rejecting yourself. Lots of studies, lots and lots of studies about this and lots of surveys, lots of ideas, lots of self-help, lots of insights, lots of biblical references. There's so much to deal with because you really need to get down to that fundamental core where you feel bad when you feel bad. Nobody likes to be rejected. You can also get to a point too where you do recognize, you know what, this is just how I felt when I wasn't picked for that team, or I was always the one that was overlooked, or I was always the one that never was invited to the prom, or I was always the one that wasn't invited to parties. It's a tough place to be. And a lot of people, that's okay. They get stronger with that. They're okay. They're okay inside, or they have that nurturing inside. So when we come back, we're going to talk about it, give you a few examples, and we're going to learn a little bit about how to love yourself when you feel rejected. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're with me on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. So we all have our stories of feeling abandonment and rejection. And you know what? No one takes a look at the star child. No one takes a look at the star child, but the star child sometimes can have it as bad or worse as the picked on child. There's a lot of reasons for that, because one, they're in isolation tank. No one understands. Nobody understands. It's like, well, you have everything. You're beautiful. You're smart. You're funny. You're talented. How in the world could you have anything to be complain about or to feel bad about? And all the empathy and the love and the nurturing and the energy goes to the wounded child or the child that needs more help or the one who has struggles in life, right? Everybody loves an underdog. But the harsh reality is that your child, who is the star child, has enormous pressure on them, and also they haven't developed their self-esteem. They're given life and love and nurturing according to the gifts they were given, not the person they are. You might be that person. You may be the person who's doing that. You may be that person who received that. And so what happens is that many people will grow up then not feeling that they as a core person are loved. That if all of a sudden their beauty goes, or if all of a sudden their piano hands go, or something happens, they aren't the show pony anymore. They're not the star pony. They'll just be put out to pasture. They will not be loved. This is a very important thing. Sometimes we don't think about that. Oh, I was given everything, I hear people say. And my parents loved everything I did. And let me backtrack. The eating disorder inpatient clinic that I went to, where they used to keep people for up to 30, 90 days, even longer if needed. Insurance doesn't allow that so much anymore. But this was a really heavy duty facility for people that were really, really not able to, they were on the brink of not surviving. And so many of them were extremely accomplished. I would walk into that beautiful ranch and I would hear music that would make me cry as I'm walking in. It was so emotional and so amazing. And so, and it would be, it's just one of the girls, I was in the women's part. There were men and children. There's a whole children's facility on the property. But I would hear these this beautiful music, very accomplished. Someone else would be extreme, the highest that they could go in polo, let's say, or the highest they could go in some kind of endeavor. They were overachievers, and yet they were starving because there was nothing. And they felt like they were defective. I would go in and I would ask, when you look in the mirror, what do you see? Now, we all expect for people to say, I see a fat person. And many of them said that. But if you go further, no, what do you see? And keep asking, they go down to, I see a zero. I see a zero. I see a defect. I see something that wasn't meant to be. So something in them caused that. Don't know what, don't know how. And there are many secrets that your children have. Many secrets. And I know that's a scary thing to say, because you can't see them 24/7. And sometimes they run into things that they don't understand. Some kind of abuse, some kind of a really scary situation, or they watch something, or they see something, or they're over a friend's house and someone is inappropriate with them, but they just don't even understand, one, that it's inappropriate, and two, they're scared, or they don't know what to do with it, and they just go home, eat dinner, and want to go play with their friend again. So these things happen, and it can all eat away at that self-esteem. So later on in life, when rejection hits, it can really cripple people. It can really, really get them down. So first, I want to talk to you a little bit about just a case study. And the case study is this, because it's not really a study. This is actually, I got this from the Dyslexia website. So it's the Power of Dyslexia. Okay. And this particular website, they are dedicated to focusing not on the negative qualities of dyslexia, but the positive effect it can have on a person's life and the world. Isn't that awesome? So they're turning it on its ear. The Power of Dyslexia seeks to help children with dyslexia, adults with dyslexia, and parents of dyslexic children in order to create a more aware and sensitive culture for all. And it describes dyslexia. And I will tell you, actually, I have not had dyslexia throughout my life. However, in a weird quirk of something, don't know why, how, whether it was extreme stress, which I don't think it was. Maybe it was. It could have been. Actually, there was a lot of stress at that time. Could have been anything. But I went through a period of 2 years where I literally was dyslexic, where I literally had to check everything I did over and over again because I would transpose things. I would give out a phone number. I would not just once, but always, all the time. I would have people check what I wrote so that it was not transposed. Always. I was very humble about it in the way that I didn't want to cover it up because I didn't want to make a mistake. So I would say, hey, read that back. Check it, please. Check this for me. Please look at this. Check this. Make sure that everything is there's no numbers transposed. This is what I meant to have down there. And please take a look. So I had all kinds of checks and balances for that. But I didn't understand it was temporary. I just thought, wow, what has happened to me? So it could have been anything. I could have had a virus. I could have, it was a long time ago, but I could have had a virus. I don't recall. I see in retrospect, there were a lot of things that could have caused it. I don't know whether at that point I have had injuries before where I had a canoe fall on my head from the top of a van. I've fallen off a horse. I'm not really sure, but all I know is that that did happen to me. And I'm very empathetic because it can lead to a panic because you're reading and you just can't. The reading wasn't as bad, but I had to read very slowly, but it was in the remembering. And in my brain, I would remember them, especially numbers reversed. Very bizarre. And then it went away. Just boom, went away. So it was a very unusual experience. And but it really gave me huge empathy and knowing. So here's a one of the highlights from this Power of, which I just found today, actually, the Power of Dyslexia. And it showcases Barbara Cochran. And for those of you who don't know Barbara Corcoran, I guess is a better way to say her last name, she is the star of Shark Tank. She was a real estate mogul. I mean, she was she was like at the top of all the real estate moguls in New York City. Made fortunes and fortunes and fortunes. She's a very interesting person. I heard her interviewed probably 8 years ago, and I was fascinated because she talked about how she was constantly rejected in school, how she was told she would never amount to anything, how she was ridiculed, and how she was rejected by her own peers and friends. She did mention, though, that her mother was always not just encouraging, but saying, you know, in 10 years, you're not going to know these people's name anyway. You are you, and you are worth everything. And it was a really important thing for her. So this is an article that it says Barbara Shark Tank's Barbara Corcoran, not defined by dyslexia. So basically, they're talking about how she was born in New York and she was the second of 10 children and shared a 2-bedroom apartment with all those kids. And she said her mother was an amazing person who encouraged the ability of each special ability and quality of each of her children, which is amazing. However, she had lots and lots of trouble outside of her home. She struggled to read. She couldn't read. She didn't fit in with her peers. She felt alone. She said she felt she believed she was stupid. She believed she was stupid. Now, that's different than, oh, I think I'm stupid. She believed, her core belief was that she was stupid. And she relates that no amount of a mother's love could overcome her feelings of isolation. So she went through all school. And you know how your heart breaks when your child does not fit in. But it was her mother's encouragement, she says, and she's related this in the other interview I saw 7 or 8 years ago. She attributes her mother's encourage her to see that her imagination and use her imagination to an extent that she could see situations and outcomes without second guessing. Now, I can't even imagine the beauty of a mom that would do such a thing like that and would even think about that. Use your imagination to see the situations and the outcomes. Engender the imagination, not, oh, put that imagination away and let's do some math. She made D's in high school. And when she went, she decided to try for a degree in education. She taught for a year and then went to a different job. And she ended up on 23 different jobs by the time she was 20. And she still was struggling to read. And her dyslexia, she didn't even have a diagnosis. She just couldn't read. And so she was looked at as less than stupid. She had very low self-esteem. But she kept on pressing on. Determined. We're going to get back to her and what you can do to love yourself in times of rejection. I am Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me on Dr. Michelle Live. We're walking this road together. We're talking about how to not reject yourself when you're rejected, how to love yourself even when you are rejected by a lover, by a boyfriend, by a teacher, by a group, by a friend, by your home of origin, or the feeling that you got that you would be rejected. Even though you did not put it in those terms intellectually when you were a child, the feeling that if you didn't live up to the mark, if you weren't the star, you would fall from grace in your father's eyes, fall from grace in your mother's eyes. Sometimes mothers and fathers project themselves into their children. That's the dance moms and the star moms and the this mom. And some kids really love what they do, and that's great. And it could be star dads, you know, and it could be either the same sex or the opposite sex child. It can be the dad who just rides that child for being the best in the football team, the best in the basketball team, the best. All they do is get accolades for being the best, the best, the best, the best, the best. Sometimes they succeed to be the best and they're very happy doing that and thank their parents for that. Other times they feel rejected. That's because it's not who they are inside. They may want to sit and draw and think and stare out windows while they think and play and look at flowers. They may not want to be out there pleasing their dads or their moms, being the best at a martial art, and football and baseball and track. Very high pressure society. So anyway, I've only got this last segment, so I want to get to rejecting how you can deal with it. And again, we're going to go into talking about if you've been rejected by love, a boyfriend you hope was going to go to marriage, a husband you thought that would be there. You know, I've told you the story. It shocked me. Back when I was, 19 years old, but a woman who lived across the street from, my sister-in-law at the time had, I think, two children, went into the hospital with twins and, to have twins, and the twins were born in those days. They stayed in the hospital longer, and her husband was there. And when she came back from the delivery room, he told her he was leaving her, and he did. And I thought, what? Same case with someone else who had a riding accident and was in a body cast. And while the woman's in a body cast, literally, she just really couldn't move. She was in a riding accident. And that's when her husband announced that God wanted him to be happy. And so to be happy, he had to leave her in her body cast. So these things happen. Now, how do you deal with that? You know, how do you deal with that? All right. So, but nothing this extreme, just, you know, you're just unrequited love. Let's say you're 17, you have unrequited love. And you're just sure this person likes you so much and you realize it's not going to happen. So going back to Barbara Corcoran, she struggled in school. She believed she was stupid. It didn't matter how great her mom was. She felt isolated. She felt, you know, she just couldn't. She was never going to succeed. She was told she was never going to succeed. She got D's in school. She got in high school. She went on to college, but she couldn't succeed in college. She had all these different jobs. But her mother did encourage her to use her imagination. This is what your gift is, imagination. Use it. Use that imagination. And that's what's going to help you. She's still, to this day, as successful as she is and as amazing as she is, she deals with low self-esteem. She says it wasn't until her son was diagnosed with dyslexia that she even knew she had it. She thought, wow, that kind of sounds familiar. So the whole point here is that her willingness to keep on going, to listen to that little voice that her mother helped implant about her own imagination, her own determination, outside of what other people say, think, do, or what we think the norm is. This is what keeps her open. This is what keeps her happy. She has scars. She admits to her scars, but they did not prevent her from growing. Okay, so how, let's relate that to ways that you may actually be rejecting yourself when you get rejected. So let's say you get rejected by your mom, by your dad, by your school, by your job, by a team, by an athletic, by a girlfriend, by your group of friends, by your prayer group, by someone you thought you could count on, even by your, let's say, your parish priest, you know, anything. Lots of things happen in life like that, and they hearken back and they trigger and they unbury old wounds. So let's say this happens to you, or you've been rejected by the man you love. You've been rejected by the person you've been married to for 20 years, 30 years, 15 years. You're rejected by your children. They don't want to talk with you anymore. Talk to someone not too long ago whose own mother was completely rejected as toxic to her family by a daughter-in-law. And this person had a family of, I don't know, 4 kids. And yet this one child's spouse completely rejected it. It was such a painful thing. So how do you, if you have that propensity, stop from running into addictions, running into self-harm, overeating, beating yourself up, overshopping, doing things like that? Well, one of the things that you might be, this is how you might be rejecting yourself. So let's take a look at some of these things, because your fear, sometimes you can project it in situations, but it really comes back to the fact that you need to stop rejecting yourself once you are rejected, because then you think, okay, they rejected me. I'm just a wadded up piece of Burger King wrapper, so I might as well throw myself away too. So one of the things is judging yourself. That's the first thing we do when we're rejected. You judge yourself. What is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? So be aware of that. It's common and it's powerful, this self-judgment. I wasn't this. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't pretty enough. I should have gotten that plastic surgery. I should have catered more to their needs. I should have listened more. I should have this. I should have that. Usually when you are accepted, you're going to be accepted with your frailties. No perfection needed. No perfection wanted. So sometimes you judge yourself like you were when you were a kid, and you start saying, oh, I'm just stupid. You say to yourself, you judge yourself, you're pathetic, you're stupid, you're ugly, something's wrong with you. See, you know, you knew it. It happens all the time. Nothing ever happens to me but this. So that's the little child in you talking to you, the old feelings. So you have to start being aware. Who is that saying that to me? What is that saying that to me? I feel anxious, depressed, guilty. I've just said, oh, you stupid idiot, inside myself. Who's saying that? Who's saying that? Because that person didn't want me on their team? No, we have to think about that. So don't ignore your feelings by staying in your own mind. That's the thing. Because if you felt lonely and abandoned and rejected and heartbroken as a child and sometimes helpless, because let's say you lost someone, died. And you know, as a child, you can't really process that in a manner an adult would. You can't manage those feelings of the big pain. So sometimes what happens, we go inside of ourselves and we focus in our mind. And in our mind, we're always distorting things because we can't get a proper perspective because it's inside of our heads. So what we need to do then is we need to be aware of that. And so we need to do whatever we can to get outside of our heads and get a perspective. Get a perspective. A priest, a nun, a best friend, a self-help book, a group, a morning group, a walking group, a have coffee group, a AA group, some kind of group where you hear other people expressing the same things, and it will draw that out of you and put it on a table so you can look at it in its proper perspective. Now, the other thing we'd mentioned, turning to addictions to avoid those feelings inside. So sometimes people do that. Sometimes it's eating addiction or bulimic or anorexia, because it's about getting some control over those uncontrollable, awful feelings. Alcohol, cigarettes, pornography, TV, video games. Kids will go into their video games, sex, or internet, Facebook, constant going on the Facebook. So the other thing is making other people responsible for your feelings. This is not a good thing either, because what happens with that is that if you're loving or if you're rejecting, if you've been loved or reject, and you start loving or rejecting someone else, well, they're just, and you think of all the bad things about them, you're still just covering up the core of what needs to be taken out and looked at and rejected, and accepted. So one of the things you can do is, and we'll leave you with this and probably talk about this a little bit more. I wanted to get to something from the Huffington Post about 9 ways to love yourself. So we'll do that tomorrow about loving yourself. But one of the things is just to sit back, take a breath, and realize it. Be aware. Be aware that these hurt feelings are like dog piled from a lot of past hurts, a lot of past rejections, and that lashing out even in your own mind will only cover it up why you didn't really want them anyway. What needs to happen is a hydration of yourself inside yourself that, okay, it feels bad. It's triggering things. I'm understanding it's triggering things. I need to take a breath. I need to walk on. Well, this is Dr. Michelle. We will explore that more tomorrow. Very important topic. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, and we will see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.